This is page 125 of The Unfolding. It's the story of Jonathan Gonzalez.
On my last breath, I prayed. Now that I look back, what I did was I repented. I asked for another chance to live. And these were my words. I said, Father, I'm sorry. And if you give me one more chance to live, I'll come back and serve you. I had no idea what I was getting myself into when I prayed that prayer.
God's story has been unfolding.
Since the beginning of time.
He invites you to be a part of it.
Another page in the unfolding.
Hey, this is Meredith Foster. In the beginning, Jonathan Gonzalez's story seemed hopeless. He was a very challenging kid. He was making horrible choices. He was getting arrested by the time he was 12. If something didn't happen to change his path, he was headed for hardship and a life of pain inflicted on himself and on others. But something did happen. One night when Jonathan was 17, he was in a terrible car accident that nearly claimed his life. At the time, he didn't know who God was or if God was real. But in his desperation, just before he took his last breath, he prayed. That night changed Jonathan's life forever.
I was born here in New Jersey, but I was raised in Colombia, South America. So my childhood, I recall running around barefoot, playing soccer for hours. I remember mountains and valleys and a beautiful upbringing in Colombia. My parents are from Colombia. My grandparents are also. And that's my childhood. I was in third grade, when they decided to come back here to the States. And so we came back to Atlantic City, New Jersey, right by the shore. They call it the Jersey Shore. And that's really where I was raised and where everything started for me. I knew no English at all. I came down here actually with just knowing Spanish, even though I was born here. Beautiful memories of growing up in Colombia and with that beautiful culture that's within my DNA. You know, I can't deny it. It's in me. I can't wait to go home one day is what I say at times whenever I'm in spaces that remind me of home. I was not raised in the church. There were some Catholic backgrounds in my family, but I was never committed to a local church. And I didn't know or see or actually experience what that looked like within the home foundation. So yeah, growing up was pretty interesting, very interesting, especially when my parents broke up when I was in middle school, in sixth grade. So it's three of us. I have two younger brothers. And so very quickly, Meredith, I became kind of like daddy. I went into a daddy mode without even knowing it. My teenage years were very, very interesting, especially that middle school transition of my parents breaking up.
What was it like when you say it was interesting and you kind of assumed that role? Did your dad disappear? Or was his presence in your life a lot less? Is that part of why that happened?
Yeah. So he didn't disappear. He's an incredible man and provided for his kids and his family. And he tried his best to make things work, but he was just there less, mm-hmm. right? That mm-hmm. father figure in my life was no longer there. It really wasn't. And we all know how key the influence of a father is in a young boy's life and a young daughter's life. And so that became missing very fast, which would end up leading me down paths and creating a sense of survival, especially in the area that we grew up in. I had to learn very quickly how to survive and how to maintain and how to protect my little brothers.
Can you describe that when you say the area you grew up in? What was it like? What kinds of things were going on?
Atlantic City, New Jersey, known for its casinos and high rises. And, you know, our backyard was actually the elevator that would go up and down of the Trump Plaza, right? So the lights would light up and there's seagulls up in the sky. And, you know, that was our backyard. Mm-hmm. Everything, very tight knit, very tight community. But very under-resourced community also, mm-hmm. You know, and my mother was working and she was a blessing. She still is a blessing. She did everything that she can to provide, but there was very little parental supervision within our home foundation. I found very quickly that I would begin to make some pretty big mistakes because I just was never taught in regards to how to respond to the things of life, how to not do things and how to do the proper things. And so very early age, at the age 11 or 12 is when I began to get arrested and in trouble. Yeah, I became very defiant, you know, started smoking cigarettes at a very early age. And it went from smoking cigarettes to stealing and to getting into more trouble and more trouble. And as we all know, all it takes is just a few times and then your heart becomes numb. You become numb to the things you start doing. There is no conviction. There is no care of, well, here's what I caused. Not at all. And so at a very early age, in that middle school stage, I became a very challenging young person.
You had talked a little bit about stepping into that daddy role in some ways, and I assume that was partly for your younger siblings too. Did you still feel a responsibility toward them, or were you feeling like you were just withdrawing and just trying to do whatever you were going to do?
Yeah, no, it was very interesting. I always felt a strong responsibility of making sure my little brothers were okay. And it's very interesting now that I look back. I'm in my mid-30s. My birthday was yesterday, actually. And I look back and in my early 20s, I really did anything it took to make sure my little brothers were okay, even if that meant taking care of them myself in our home, making sure that they finished school, making sure all those little details that a father would do. Mm-hmm. I found myself really stepping into that role. So I'm heavily involved in their lives. I've been heavily involved even in my dark seasons, which I will dive into in a little bit. I still was very, very involved in the lives of my little brothers.
So you're getting arrested. Your heart's getting hardened. Middle school, what happens as you move into your later years in adolescence?
This is where it happens, Meredith. At the age of 17, I bled to death in the backseat of a vehicle. I jump into the backseat of a vehicle expecting to get home that night, not knowing that I would not see home for months, not knowing that what would happen to me in the backseat of that car would scar my life. It would damage my life. And Meredith, it actually took my life. I was the victim of a car accident. I was sitting in the backseat. I placed my left leg underneath the driver's side seat. And that night, I just wanted to get home. It's very interesting. Though I was very challenging and getting into a lot of trouble, that evening, I just wanted to make it home. I wanted to get home early. I didn't want to go smoke. I didn't want to go do anything at all. I just wanted to make it home. I was 5, 6, 7 minutes away from the house. I never made it home that evening. We pull off, and in this area, there's a marshland and some boats and a marina. And what's interesting is I remember every little detail, Meredith. And for many, many years, I dealt with so much PTSD and so many problems in regards to why must I remember all these little details? Mm-hmm. For what reason? Not knowing that God often uses our greatest pain as launching pads to our greatest calling. He really does. Not knowing that everything that would happen to me that dark evening, that bloodiest night of my life, would actually prepare me for what I do today. And so the car pulls off and my cell phone rings. I'm on my phone. I didn't put no seatbelt on. And so as we're driving, we're coming to a bend. Now, what I didn't mention to you is that the individual that was driving was under the influence at the time. And so whether that was the cause of it or whether she just wasn't paying attention, she did not turn with the bend of the road. At that exact same moment, there was a truck coming from the other side. I'm on my cell phone looking down. I hear a scream. I look up. I see lights. And bam, it happens. In a blink of an eye, everything changed. Meredith, I didn't get a chance to clinch. I didn't get a chance to move. I didn't get a chance to put my hands in front of my face. My whole body, my whole face and body was thrusted to the front of this vehicle. If it wasn't for my left leg, I would have died from the impact. I would have broken my neck and had spinal injury. My left leg became my seatbelt. And so I ended up in this position where my face was indented into this windshield as my body was just laying and hanging on. I suffered major, major trauma. Major trauma to my left leg. I suffered internal bleeding. I broke over 15 bones in my face. My cell phone explodes in my mouth. I almost lose my eye. And in a blink of an eye, everything, absolutely everything changed in my life. This is where the undeniable moment happens in my life, because that was just the beginning. I opened my eyes and I can't move. I was still awake. The impact had not, you know, taken me out yet. I was still holding on. I open my eyes and I can't move. I'm stuck, meaning my face was literally indented into this windshield. I look over to my right and I remember seeing the passenger, my friend. I see mostly the back of her head and and she was screaming. And I look over to my left, but again, I'm stuck. I can't move. Look over to my left and I see the girl that was driving, and she was really out of it. And I noticed blood coming down her face, and that's when it hit me. Okay, car accident. Something bad has happened. I can't tell you the feeling of eeriness, the feeling of darkness when you know that you're about to go. It's time. You're going slowly. And then the pain in my left leg, Meredith, my left leg was actually almost ripped off completely. And so when that pain set in, no words can describe what that feels like. From the desperation of the screaming and from the desperation of my left leg, I actually grabbed my hands, which were not damaged, and I peeled myself off. I threw myself in the back to pull my leg out. I noticed my left leg hanging, and that's when I knew that I was not going to make it. That's when I knew.
What did you think? I realize this is happening so fast, and I'm not sure that you processed it in that way, but was there even a gut response of, I'm dying? Did you have a reaction to that?
It was scary. It was very scary. This is where I had the experience that has marked me to this day. I like to say at times that I've been marked by heaven, because that evening, for the first time in my life, Meredith, my deep, which the Bible speaks about, cried out to deep. I was not brought up in church. I was not taught in Sunday school. That was foreign to me. But that evening, I cried out for help for the first time in my life. I prayed, Meredith. I did. I'll never forget the moment. The vehicles pull up. There's noise. There's sirens. There's noise going on because they're breaking windows. They're scratching and breaking metal to get to where I am laying, dying slowly. And on my last breath, I prayed. Now, I didn't pray out loud. It was internal. And I believe, Meredith, and this might be another discussion, that we were created with this innate ability to communicate with our Father in heaven, right? Sin gets in the way and really messes things up for all of us. And so I remember praying this prayer. Now that I look back, what I did was I repented. Hmm. I asked for another chance to live. And these were my words. In the midst of the screaming, the lights, the blood, the pain, the numbness, I said, Father, I'm sorry. And if you give me one more chance to live, I'll come back and serve you. Meredith, I had no idea what I was getting myself into when I prayed that prayer and when I said those words. The amount of peace that I felt in that moment when I prayed that prayer, when I prayed those words, the feeling of love is indescribable. I was at peace in the midst of my tragedy.
Had you ever felt anything like that in your life?
No, I did not. If I fast forward today, I have felt that in moments of worship at times. That's how I can describe that. That moment of peace and love, I felt it along my journey as I've been growing as a believer and as I've been growing and drawing closer to God. Mm-hmm. And which to me is one of the signs that I am on the right path. Mm-hmm. I have found, right? Or maybe he has drawn me in his timing. But I truly believe that God heard my cry that evening. In the same way that we hear David crying out to God, in my darkest pit, in my darkest hour, he heard my cry. And that's truly what I experienced in real life form at the age of 17.
Wow. What happened in those moments following? Did you remain conscious?
So I prayed the prayer that I call the prayer that changed everything. And as I'm closing my eyes, this is very interesting. I'll never forget this. I remember getting all these pictures. I saw all these pictures of me being a baby and just like my life just flashing. And the last thing I remember seeing, and I'll be completely honest with you, is my mother's face. To this day, I don't know why. Maybe it's because of the love that a mother shows to her firstborn. I don't know. I'm not a mother, you know, but I know what I saw before taking my last breath. And as I'm closing my eyes, I hear a massive loud bang above my head. What ended up happening was the firefighters were able to open up with the jaws of life a certain piece of this vehicle. And I actually show pictures and when I do presentations in schools in different places, I'm able to show images because I have them of what the vehicle looked like. And they ripped a piece of the vehicle open. And the last thing I remember seeing is actually a firefighter's hand coming down to get me. I take my last breath and it was dark. I just remember darkness. These words that I'm going to share with you actually are words that came directly from one of the firefighters. I'm here, right where I'm at, serving at the Ocean City Tabernacle, sharing my story many, many years ago. And I come down, I finish doing my thing. I'm walking in the aisle coming towards the back, and I see a man that's standing kind of against the wall. And as I'm walking to him, I notice he's crying. So me, I'm like, all right, awesome. Let's pray for him. And we're going to maybe, you know, this is me thinking, right? And as I'm walking up to him, he says, Jonathan, it was me. And I didn't hear him right. I said, what do you mean it was me? I took two steps back. And then he leans in as he's crying and he says, I pulled you out of that vehicle. Meredith, I've never hugged a man the way I hugged that individual. I'll never forget it. And this is what he tells me. He says, Jonathan, when we opened up that vehicle and saw you, you were in really bad shape. I knew that we were going to hear about you on the newspaper the next day because you lost too much blood. Your left leg was mangled. You had internal bleeding and you suffered massive trauma to your face from the hip. We pulled you up. We placed you on the stretcher and we began to take you towards the helicopter. We had trouble getting to the helicopter because, again, it was a marshy area. But he says, when we placed you on the helicopter, you were lifeless. And so I remember waking up actually in the helicopter. They woke me up with defibrillators. Remember feeling the electricity. Remember waking up to the noise, the screaming. I remember waking up to them cutting my clothing and taking my shoes off and kind of prepping me as they were taking me to Atlantic City to deal with my internal bleeding.
Did you know any of those steps or what had happened until you met him? Or was he the first to tell you about those moments?
So Meredith, I always knew what happened to me. And unfortunately, but now that I look back, I say, I'm okay with it. For many years, I ran away from the images and everything that I was remembering. I literally felt like it was haunting me. And I made some very poor decisions in running towards drugs and a lifestyle to stay away from these images, not knowing that God will use my pain as a launching pad to my greatest calling. He would use those images and that experience to reach people later on. So I remembered everything that I told you, detail to detail. That other part was the firefighter when he told me. At that point, I was out. I was unconscious. There was no life in my body, and they were trying to get me to the helicopter to address and get a heartbeat going again.
So what happened in terms of, for you medically, what happened from the helicopter ride?
Yeah, so all the injuries were, my left leg was hanging by a piece of skin. And so they placed a metal rod from my knee all the way to my ankle, and they reattached it. I was internally bleeding, so my spleen burst from the impact, and they took care of that at the hospital. When I woke up, I was in a coma for 2.5 weeks, and I had over 15 bones broken in my face. My jaw broken in 3 different places. My eye, I almost lost it from the injury, and a big open gash from the cell phone exploding on my mouth from the impact. They did a lot of work, and they did some great work. They did amazing. It's very interesting, Meredith. I sometimes ask myself, I've said this before in front of audiences, I don't know what was worse, Meredith, the impact itself or actually waking up. And after thinking about it, waking up was probably the worst part because of how much recovery I had to go through. I was in a coma for 2.5 weeks. When I woke up in a semi-vegetable state. All I could do was move my fingers. All I could do was hear. I could not talk. I had tubes everywhere. And it was very, very, very hard and very, very painful.
Literally physically painful, I'm sure. And then also just in terms of, I mean, you'd had that moment where you cried out to God and you experienced peace. Did you have any peace when you woke up? What was your emotional, spiritual, mental state like?
Yeah, that's a great question. No, I did not wake up ready to answer the call, right? I did not wake up saying, I made it. I'm awake. I survived this. I can't believe this. Thank you, God. No, I woke up very angry. I woke up in a lot of pain and I woke up falling into a massive depression. Level of anxiety was incredible because every time I heard a siren or every time I heard something or a loud bang, it would take me back to those images. And unfortunately, Meredith, I ended up falling into a massive opiate addiction shortly after waking up. I was hooked up to morphine for many, many months. And then I was also being given a lot of Percocets when they were first just coming out. And so at the age of 17 and 18, I am ingesting, not even through my mouth, all through my stomach because my mouth was wired shut.
Wow.
15 Perc 10s through my stomach a day. Wow. And that went on for many, many months. And so I did not wake up saying, here I am. Who is God? Who heard my cry? I woke up running the other way. I woke up in a lot of pain. I did not want to live. I was suicidal. There was no hope. I just, I didn't know why. I was asking the question why. Here's something that I've read and I found through my journey is the two greatest moments in a person's life are the day that they are born and the day they find out why. And that's the part that that I was missing. My why was, why did I survive? Why did this happen to me? And if God does exist, why would he allow me to go through the things that I just went through?
Jonathan was going to figure out his why. He would learn why God allowed him to survive, what God's purpose was for him. But learning those things was not going to be easy. Part two of his story is coming up. But first, a word from our sponsor, Habib Habib, founder of H-Squared Leadership Institute. Habib, sometimes you hear these like stereotypes about the younger generation, or you hear older people complaining about the younger generation, their work ethic, that it's not as strong as it should be. Do you have thoughts on that?
Sure. You know, sometimes that's legitimate. It depends on the person. But we were younger once. We have to keep, that's what I always try to remind myself. I was younger once. So the older generation was looking at me and saying, oh, you know, he doesn't have my work ethic. What we need to do is form relationships with the younger generation. Role model. You can't walk up to them and say, you know what, you need to work harder. That's not going to work. Jesus came around, had relationships with people that were horrible, and brought them into the fold. And so if we have a coworker that's doing their minimal, putting out minimal effort, find out why. Build a relationship with them and inspire them to be better rather than just get mad about it.
And you can find some of that inspiration on your website.
Yes, at HabibHabib.com. I faced that for so long in business. And so you can't give up on the younger generation. They're the future workers of America. They're the future of America. So.
And now part two of Jonathan Gonzalez's story.
Meredith, I didn't want to live. And I didn't want to face the pain, but I had no other choice but to move on. I had no other choice but to take whatever was in front of me. I adapted. I moved forward. Unfortunately, I fell into years of addiction, but God was faithful even through that.
Did you ever, you talked about being suicidal. Was there ever a time where you came close to doing something like that?
Yes. I would say there was probably two or three times where I attempted and it just wouldn't work. Mm-hmm. I would wake up still. And so no matter what I tried to do or no matter how far I would run into my addiction or into my cave of darkness, God was still calling me. The signs were still coming my way.
At what point did you remember that moment you'd had with God right before you blacked out?
That's a great question. So I go into a season of massive addiction. I go into a season where Meredith, I said, if a car accident didn't stop me, then who will? My mind was not okay. My mental health was not stable. And on top of all of that, I was 18, 19 already. And, you know, there was a lawsuit involved and I ended up with this little green card called our debit card. It had some money in it. And because I was 18 and 19, I took it. This is mine. You know, this belongs to me. And I made some very, very poor decisions in just wasting it all pretty much in the addiction and in the lifestyle that I was living. So I find myself being 19, 20 and I'm empty. And I'm talking about empty, dry inside. On the outside, individuals are praising me because I am that Spanish boy that survived. I was a miracle boy. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, that's Jonathan who survived that crazy car accident. And on the outside, though, things looked good. On the inside, I was empty. I was dying. I was spiritually dead. There was no purpose. There was no no strength, no hope to move forward. I didn't even know I was going to make it through my 20s. And to be honest, I didn't care if I did. You know, that was a mentality that I was living in. And so I'm laying in my bed and I'll never forget this. This was right before I hit 20. I'm crying and I'm asking, why do I feel this way? And I felt as if God took me back to that car accident, not in a physical way, not in a mystical way, but just in a way of remembering. And I feel and I sense that he said, listen, I answered what you asked for. I answered your prayer. But the reason why you're feeling the way you are feeling is because you have not kept your end of it. You're not serving me. And Meredith, I began to seek with everything that I had. I said, you know what? Okay, I see what's going on. I'm here. I'm alive for a reason. And someone answered my prayer. I need to find out who answered my prayer. So I began to seek. I did. I began to seek everywhere I could. The last thing I picked up was the Bible, to be honest, even though it was always there. I began to notice that when I would pray, and I've always been a writer, I would always write out my prayers. And when I began this journey of prayer, things really began to shift in my life when it came to the addictions and the pains and the PTSD and all these things that left trauma in my life. And especially when I began to pray and end in Jesus' name, I really began to experience something very, very different. Now, a missionary comes to my home, not for me. She came for my mother. Unfortunately, I put my family through a lot in that season of my life. So she comes and she's there to pray and to connect and to see if she can just be of support to my mother. And she leaves a book behind, a book that I would say has been key and elemental to what I do today. If it wasn't for this book in my life, I tell you, I wouldn't have actually entered into this journey that I am on when it comes to understanding the Bible. This book is called A Purpose-Driven Life. This book was left in my home in Spanish, and it was left for my mother. And so one day I'm walking by, I'm in this journey of seeking, and I'm experiencing some change, but I don't know who God is yet, but I feel like he's revealing himself. And when this book came into my life, I said, Mom, are you reading that book? And she says, no, just take it. And I grabbed it. And Meredith, I started to believe what this book said in it. And I took one day at a time. And little did I know that what I was starting to believe in was actually scripture. It was scripture that I was able to understand and I was able to take in. And it started to change my life. And I'll never forget where it said, all right, you have now accepted Christ in your heart on that one day. I need you to go tell someone. And I call my aunt and I'm fired up. I'm like, hey, I know why I was left alive, right? I've accepted Christ and I'm ready to move forward. And I was just super excited about everything. And so this is where the journey really, really began in my life when it came to understanding who God is, God's call on our lives, and the power of prayer. Prayer has changed my life. Hmm. Meredith, I no longer am addicted to anything. I haven't touched anything for over 15 years. I don't even remember the last time that I picked up anything that had me chained down on that kind of addiction. Yes, that this book and the journey of prayer has absolutely revolutionized my life.
Can you describe some of those moments along the way? Like as you begin to understand having conversation with God and that it has this impact in your life, can you just describe how some of those things began to be broken off of you?
Yeah. So for me, I remember I was just tired. I didn't want to live anymore. I didn't want to deal with the addiction. And when I started to pray and to write down my prayers, I still have the books in my home.
Oh, wow.
I would write them down. Help me in Spanish. Help me, Lord. Get me out of this. Take this away from me. I noticed every day I was getting a little bit stronger. In the beginning, I was very sick. I detoxed it by myself in this one room. I was very sick.
Wow.
But me crying out to him really sustained me. It really helped me. And I would not be here today, number one, if it wasn't for that prayer that changed everything prior to me taking my last breath. And I would not have survived the addiction, the trauma, the streets. I would have never survived all of that if it wasn't for me engaging in communication with my Father in heaven. So the practicality aspect of it was just me literally unplugging from everything and everyone that was a negative influence in my life. Mm-hmm. I became dead to them. They literally thought that Jonathan has gone crazy and has disappeared. There was no phone. It was just me in my room writing letters to God to help me through this season in my life. And then again, I point you back to the book, A Purpose-Driven Life, because it played a key role in pointing me to the Bible and starting this journey that I am on today.
So were you 19, 20 when this transformation began?
Yeah, so I was 2021.
2021,
yes.
Okay.
Yeah, and so I come to a chapter in the book, A Purpose-Driven Life, where it says, all right, you've made it to this step, and now it's time for you to find a Bible-teaching church, right? That's one of the steps. And so in my mind, I'm like, okay, well, there's churches everywhere. I should be able just to stop in somewhere.
Walk in, right? Yeah.
Not that easy. Now that I think back, but what ended up happening with me is my little cousin got married at a church not too far from where I lived at the time. And so I remember driving up to this other church because we always drive past it, and a very old Methodist brick church. And so I'm like, all right, that's where I'm going. I remember pulling up and I never went in. I stopped, and I turned around and I left back. And then the thought of going to this other church where my little cousin got married came to my mind, and I went there. Hmm. And Meredith, I walked through the doors of a church called Praise Tabernacle, and I never walked out. I never walked out. And so I walk in, and I'll never forget hearing the word being preached the way I did. I never heard someone communicate the word, and never seen people worshiping and eyes closed. I never seen that before. And so when I walked in, something very special happened to me. God really gripped my heart. And today, what's very interesting is, you know, this is where I met my wife. Today, I'm actually one of the other pastors at this church, Praise Tabernacle. If it wasn't for the influence and the love that the Praise Tabernacle team and the pastors shared with me back then, I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing today at the level that I'm doing here at the Ocean City Tabernacle, because I serve at another tabernacle full time while I still serve and give some time to Praise Tabernacle.
Can you describe, you're talking about that first day when you walked in and you're seeing things you've never seen before, experiencing, I assume, visually, emotionally, spiritually, stuff that's totally new to you. Can you remember what went through your head?
Yeah, I was getting emotional and I didn't know why. Again, I was a baby still. Mm-hmm. I was still very infant in the faith. I was still learning. You know, I'm experiencing things and I'm seeing God moving in my life. I'm seeing me being freed from the drugs. That was a big thing. Yeah. You know, addiction touches almost every family in this world, in this nation. There's not one family does not go affected by it. And nowadays, with the way things are, when someone gets really addicted, you kind of prepare yourself for what's happening, the epidemic of overdoses and people dying. And so that was a big, big sign for me that God was at work, that God was real, that God was hearing my prayers. And so walking in there, I just cried, you know, yeah, just tears. And I was very emotional. I just felt like I was supposed to be there, right? I felt like this was on purpose. This was real. And that this was going to change my life if I stayed consistent and committed.
Well, I was just thinking that word purpose. You had been in this darkest of dark place. You described it as a cave, and that cave of addiction and all the darkness that comes with that. You'd survived this car accident, and in your heart or in your gut, you're asking, why? What's the point? This is misery. And it really is all about purpose. I just think it's really cool that the book, and that you're beginning to see that as you're walking through that. Just in that idea of purpose, how did that begin to take shape in your mind about, did you have a sense of, this is where I'm headed? This is what God's created me for? Did you know where you were going, or were you just kind of on a journey like purpose-driven life, just one day at a time?
Yeah. So again, this is why the work that we do is so critical. If it wasn't for Pastor Steve, Pastor Josh, if it wasn't for loving believers who believed in me, who accepted me in my pain and said, Jonathan, God loves you and God has a plan for your life, and who prayed for me, right? Who walked me through, who knows what would have happened to me? You know, it was the care and the love of believers that kept me in also. You know, Pastor Steve calls me the next day. I get a phone call because I fill out something called a little contact card, right? I filled out the contact card and I get a call the following day, and it's him and it's Pastor Steve. Thank you for coming. You know, we noticed that you're a first time guest, so on and so on. And so he's doing what he has to do. And on the inside, I have something telling me you need to talk to him. Tell him you need to talk to him. And so I said, Pastor Steve, can I come and meet with you sometime? I would love to talk to you and share with you some things. And so for the first time, I share all of that trauma that I had been hiding and all of those things that I've been running away from. And I share with him what happened to me in that car. And the second that I shared that with him, it's like something unlocked. It's like a new chapter began in my life. And he continued to say, well, Jonathan, God has a plan for your life. And here's what I want you to do. I want you to connect with the youth pastor here. And so I connected with the youth pastor and I started to come consistently. I was there. I was there cleaning up. I was there helping. I just wanted to be a part of whatever God was doing at this local church. And so, yeah, they were key. They were key. I don't think they realized how much of a key they were and how much of a part they played in my journey, especially at that time that I was in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very hard to continue to survive as a lone wolf, right? And discipleship hardly happens. I mean, discipleship mostly happens in community. So you can just see as those people, God's putting those people around you, just beginning to help you form and shape into what he's going to do and his purpose for you. So I'm going to assume you kind of got hooked into the youth ministry, or how did things progress from there?
Yeah. So again, I met Pastor Josh, who was a youth pastor then, and he said, well, come be a part of our youth ministry. Come hang out with us and come help. And I'm sure he saw some kind of potential. He believed in me. He kept me around. I stayed in proximity, right? And I think what was really key for me, and I encourage anyone who's listening to this, is I was consistent. Sometimes we're very inconsistent in what God is doing in our lives, and we give too much leeway to other things. But there's a beauty. There's a beauty. And I have found massive success in being consistent and faithful. And so I would show up. I was showing up once, twice a week, and I was there before it started. I stayed there afterwards to help out. And then I remember there was a time where baptisms were happening. And so I heard, I'm like, oh, okay, so is this the next step? Cool, awesome, let's do it. Well, in that time of getting prepared to be baptized, I was told, hey, before we baptize you, we would love for you to share with the congregation what God has done in your life. And maybe you can share a little bit of those things that you went through. And that's where it started. That's where I would say the unfolding started in my life when it comes to sharing my story, not just with that congregation, but I have probably lost count of how many times I've shared my story or impacted young people, anyone, any audience I am placed in front of to bring hope. I'm here alive to do just that.
So you share it for the first time with the congregation. What was that experience like for you? Did it feel like this is what I'm supposed to do? Did you know away?
No, it was scary. I didn't want to do it. I didn't want to. The last thing I would think I would be doing today is actually being someone who would speak in public, right? No, that wasn't a thing for me, but I was, again, faithful and obedient, right?
Yeah.
I was taking heed to what others were telling me who were further along in their journey. And so I said, okay, all right, let's do it. I'll try it out. And so it was probably choppy, you know, I can only imagine, but that's okay. And I remember being scared, but I remember feeling this this fulfillment after being done. And it was very special because, you know, and now that I look back, they did an amazing job. It was really well-timed. You know, I shared my story. I am feeling this feeling of fulfillment and wow, this is really why I'm here. And then I get baptized and then something beautiful happens. I come out the water and now I am on. I am on fire. I am ready. So I joined a 1-year discipleship training program, like a Bible Institute. I left my full-time job and just took on a part-time and just focused on chasing and learning about God. That discipleship program really impacted my life in a very special and beautiful way. I really found out who I was, right? I learned a lot about myself, learned about some of my strengths and some of my weaknesses. And I learned to study the Bible myself. I learned to develop this prayer life, this communication with God on my own. And so, we went to Africa. I've been around a few different places. And I've never looked back since. I haven't. I came back from doing a little bit of traveling, went back to South America to share my story. And when I come back, I noticed that the church was really open to me getting involved with youth, right? So I'm probably 21, 22-ish. And I took on the role. Yeah, I said, sure. I didn't go to no seminar. I didn't go to no school. but I am faithful. I am hungry. And I'm ready to impact youth with my story and with this hope that we all have in us now that we have accepted Christ, right? And so I was really, they were very exciting times now that I look back, for sure.
So one of the things is you're describing your story, and I think it's interesting, you're wearing a shirt today that says, I surrender. And that's really that's what I hear is a total surrender to, you didn't even know exactly what, but there was this baseline belief that God's directing this, and whatever was put before you, you were willing to say, yeah, I'll do that.
Amen. No, I agree. I agree. And I think it all starts with surrender, right? It's probably one of the hardest things to do because, you know, whether not knowing what situation an individual might be, that journey of surrender could be very different. But I tell you what, Meredith, today, my wife and I are celebrating 12 years, right? In August, we celebrate 12 years. Today, I am blessed with two beautiful little children, my little girl, Hadassah, and my little boy, Nehemiah. Today, I I do this full time, right? I mean, I am living my dream today. Literally, what I used to dream about doing when it comes to, I hope one day I can just share my story and this is what I do, right? Working with youth, working with people. And so today I serve at the Ocean City Tabernacle, which is another tabernacle. They're not related, but they just happen to be called tabernacles. I serve here full time. I've been working with youth ever since I said yes to that call of helping at that other smaller church. And I oversee a pretty awesome after school program where we reach kids every single day. They come here from the public school systems, and we offer our youth center as a space for them to have activity, relationships, community, some food, and we get to share with them about God. And that happens every day. It's very interesting. It's youth ministry every single day.
Wow.
And that's kindergarten all the way to eighth grade. It's a pretty large program. We initiated something for the high school students. I mean, we're on the move, right? And so I look back and I say, wow, God has been so, so good. I can't believe. And I feel like I'm just getting started, if that makes any sense. I feel like I'm just knee deep, right? Like there's so much more to this journey, and I'm excited. So yeah, I have a dream of speaking at every alternative school in New Jersey, and with the blessing of God, maybe taking it abroad. I have found that I love speaking in public arenas. I will never stop speaking within our churches. Absolutely not. I will always do that until there's no more breath in my lungs. But there's something very special about going into a public arena like a school, an alternative school, and having a group of kids that have been left behind, or this is it. This is their last resort. You hear me? And so I found a very beautiful way of sharing my story where I can present hope and connect and bring a light in those areas. So,
man, that's so exciting. And to think about that moment in the car accident when it's going dark and you felt that hope and that peace, you know, for the first time, but then the long journey between that and actually figuring out, I mean, you're talking about years, right, of misery until you could surrender and kind of put the next piece in that puzzle. It's a long way, but to now look and see when you're fully surrendered, all that God is doing, it's amazing. It's a really, it's an amazing story.
It's beautiful. I believe the Bible says that he who begins a good work in you is faithful to complete it. And that's truly what I am experiencing. He began a work in me when I cried out to him in the midst of my agony. And I am seeing just the fruit of you know, what it looks like to walk a faithful Christian walk. Right? I'm really experiencing that today. So it's a blessing.
The refrain that you heard Jonathan say several times, God often uses our greatest pain as launching pads to our greatest calling. That's a really interesting perspective on the hard things that you've experienced. God's using Jonathan's story. He's writing a book. It's called I Am More Than My Scars. And as he mentioned, he speaks frequently to youth groups, recovery groups. His dream is to share his story in every alternative school in New Jersey, and I think it would be cool if it goes way beyond that. If you'd like to learn more about him or invite him to speak, head to his website, jonathangonzalez.net. You can also find him on Facebook or at Jonathan_speaks on Instagram. Thanks to Jonathan for sharing his story. Thanks to all the folks who make The Unfolding possible. Danielle Perez, Elena Nowlin, our producer, Jason Rakow, and also our sponsor, Habib Habib. He's the founder of H Squared Leadership Institute. Find out how Habib can share inspiration and motivation at your workplace at HabibHabib.com. The Unfolding is produced by Northwestern Media, a ministry of the University of Northwestern St. Paul. We'll be back next week with another page in The Unfolding. You know, so many of us are dealing with issues of mental health, either in ourselves or in the people we love. Well, we've got a new podcast that I think you'll find really helpful.
Mental Health with Dr. Melissa Mork is a podcast that tells stories of mental illness, resilience, and faith.
You know, so much of anxiety is in our minds. So much of it is in how we think about ourselves and how we think about the world around us.
The goal of this podcast is to reduce the stigma of mental illness, especially within the church, by having conversations that normalize this experience.
Even if nothing ever changed until the day that I died, that God would still love me and that I was still going to heaven.
Mental Health with Dr. Melissa Mork on Apple, Google, and Spotify.